Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 14, Brahma's Prayers to Lord Krishna, Text 37. Prapancham,
Prapancham.
Miss Prapancha,
Miss Prapancha.
Api
vidambayasi vidambayasi
bhutale
bhutale
prapanna
prapanna
janata
janata
ananda
ananda
sandoham
sandoham
pratitum
pratitum
prabho
prabho
prapancham nisprapachopi Prapancham nishprapanchopi
Prapancham nishprapanchopi
Idambayasi bhutale
Idambayasi bhutale
Prapana janatan nanda
Prapana janatan nanda
Sandoham pratitum prabho
Sandoham pratitum prabho
Prapancham nishprapanchopi
Prapancham nishprapanchopi
Vidambayasi bhutale
Vidambayasi bhutale
Prapana janatanda
Prapana janatanda
Sandoham pratitum prabho
Sandoham pratitum prabho
Prapancham nishprapanchopi
Prapancham nishprapanchopi
Vidyavasya bhutale
Vidyavasya bhutale
Prapanna
janatanda
Sanandam pratitam prabho
Sanandam pratitam prabho
Prapancham nishprapanchopi
Prapancham nishprapanchopi
Vidyavasya bhutale
Vidyavasya bhutale
Prapanna janatanda
Prapanna janatanda
Sandoham pratitam prabho
Sandoham pratitam prabho
Prapancham nishprapanchopi
Vidyambayasi bhutale
Prapanna
janatananda
Sandoham pratitum prabho
Prapancham
Prapancham
That which is material
Nishprapancha
Completely transcendental to material existence.
Api
although
Idambayasi
you imitate
Bhutale
on the surface of the earth. Prapanna
who are surrendered.
Janata
people.
Ananda Sandoham. The great variety of different kinds of ecstasies. Pratitum.
In order to spread.
Prabho. O Master.
O Master.
Translation purport by Srila Prabhupada's disciples. My dear Master, although you have nothing to do with material existence, you come to this earth and imitate material life just to expand the varieties of ecstatic enjoyment for your surrendered devotees.
My dear Master,
purport. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakura points out that just as a lamp does not seem to shine as brightly on sunlight in sunlight as it does in the shade, or as a diamond does not seem as brilliant on a silver platter as it does on a plate of blue glass, the Lord's pastimes as Govinda do not seem as amazing in the transcendental abode of Vaikuntha as they do within the material realm of Maya. Lord Krishna comes to earth and acts towards his pure devotees exactly like a devoted son, boyfriend, husband, father, friend, and so on. And within the darkest material existence, these brilliant liberated pastimes give unlimited ecstasy to the surrendered devotees of the Lord. In his Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Srila Prabhupada quotes Lord Rama as follows: I can also understand that your appearance as a small cowherd boy, a child of the cowherd men, is not at all a material activity. You are so much obliged by their affection that you are here to enthuse them with more loving service for your transcendental presence. Prapancham nishprapancho pi idam bayasi bhutale prapana janatananda sandoham pratitum prabho. My dear master, although you have nothing to do with material existence, you come to this earth and imitate material life just to expand the varieties of ecstatic enjoyment to your surrendered devotees. Mom Vishnu Bhadaya Krishna Prasai Bhadaya Srimate Bhakti Dhananda Swami Dhanamare Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Prasharane Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Vasakajyati. The essence of spiritual life is rasa, and the 10th canto deals with rasa, rasa being composed of vibhava, anubhava, sattvika bhava, sthayi bhava, and vyabhichari bhava. So these combine together, just like the ocean is a combination of waves and different aquatic animals, and different types of clouds, and different types of turbulence in the ocean. So, similarly, the ocean of devotional service has different components, a variety of ecstasy. But in order to understand that, one has to have some knowledge about Krishna. And thus we can understand who Krishna is, it doesn't mean very much to us the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. Therefore, the other 9 cantos of Srimad Bhagavatam are to explain to us who Krishna is and how we can come to the level of appreciating Krishna. Generally, Krishna says, Avijanati mam bhuta manushintanam ashrityam param bhavam ajanato mamabhuta maheshwara, that the fools, they deride at my descending in this human-like form. They do not know my transcendental nature and my supreme dominion over all that be. Therefore, to think that when Krishna comes, he's just an ordinary cowherd boy is obviously missing the point. There are so many cowherd boys. And Krishna's pastimes are not simply that of another cowherd boy 5,000 years ago herding cows. Now, that same cowherd boy, when he opened his mouth, Mother Yasoda looked in and tried to find some dirt, and she saw the whole universe inside his mouth. So to us, unless we're actually conscious of Krishna, this seems like rather a nice thing to read to your children at night before they go to sleep, because better than reading about the witches and goblins, read about Krishna opening his mouth and Mother Yasoda seeing some universes inside. Children will appreciate this. But actually, it's not a children's story, nor is it an exaggeration. But we can't really understand this unless we become at least partially Krishna conscious. In other words, unless we realize that Krishna is not only controlling the whole universe, but he's controlling every part of my life, every part of everyone else's life within my experience, then it won't be possible to appreciate how he's controlling the universe. If I can't see Krishna controlling everything right before me, then how am I going to accept he's controlling everything in the universe, or in many universes? Therefore, 10th canto is really a culmination of a process of realization where we see Krishna everywhere. Or as Krishna says, Sarabhutinichatmini Ikshate Yoga Mukta Atma Saratra Samadarshanaha. Yomam Pashiti Saratra Saravam Chamani Pashiti Dasyaham Napanashami Sachamena Panashiti. That the true yogi observes me in all beings and also sees every being me. Indeed, the self-realized soul sees me, the same Supreme Person, everywhere. And for one who sees me everywhere, and who sees everything in me, I am never lost to him, nor is he ever lost to me. In other words, there is a process by which we can gradually perceive Krishna everywhere, and see that Krishna is in everyone's heart, and nothing is going on outside of Krishna's sanction. It doesn't mean that Krishna is responsible for everything that's going on, because Krishna is fulfilling everyone's desires. But the amazing thing is that although Krishna is fulfilling everyone's desires, everything is perfectly arranged for everyone at every moment. It's not that some crazy person breaks in to my house and Krishna tried to control him, but he couldn't do it, and I'm an unfair victim of a crazy person. No, if we examine past history, we'll find out that that crazy person simply came to give me what I deserve at that particular moment, and everything's exactly on schedule. Maybe not my schedule, but according to the universal schedule, he's exactly on time. He wasn't 5 minutes late. One man, he sent his servant to get some purchases in the market, and when he arrived in the market, he saw death personified standing there smiling at him, practically laughing. So this man became very nervous, fled back to his master's house, and said, "My master, I couldn't buy anything in the market, because when I went there, I saw death personified standing there smiling at me. So I became very afraid, and I came back here for your shelter." So he said, "All right, no problem. Just go to this other market in this other town, and you won't have to worry about death personified there." So this other man went to this other town to make the purchases, and out of curiosity, the master went to the city and found death personified smiling there. And he went up to death personified and said, "Why were you smiling at my servant?" So death personified said, "Because I was very surprised to see him there. I had this appointment with him at another city." We may not realize, well, our goal is to realize how Krishna is in control of my life. In other words, if we allow Krishna to control our lives by following his directions, then we'll see how Krishna is controlling everyone's life. Whether or not they're allowing Krishna to control, Krishna either directly through his internal energy or indirectly through his external energy is controlling everyone's life. But I'm allowed to see that as much as I surrender to Krishna. Others who don't surrender to Krishna, they think that they're independent. But actually, they're simply under different controls of the material nature. And Krishna's above it, as he says, "Ye chayava satika bhava rajasa samasas chaye adake viti kanviri da chaham keshu te mai." That Yechaiva Satvika Bhava Rajasa. There are the three modes: goodness, passion, ignorance. And the whole world is subordinate to these three modes. Tribhira Gunamaya Bhava, Avik Sarvam Idam Diga, Moidam Navijana Hi Mamedya Param Avya. Because we're deluded by these three modes, we don't know Krishna. Who are above these three modes and inexhaustible. Our attempt is to get to know Krishna. We have no other purpose of the Krishna consciousness movement. That's why it's called the Krishna consciousness movement. It's simply to help us become conscious of Krishna. And if we do that, then we become conscious of everything else. Then, if we become conscious of everything else, then we'll understand what Krishna's plan is. And his plan is very simple, to help people become conscious of him. And if we have some other motivation, then the whole world seems very confusing, very complicated. We can read books of philosophy for millions of years. So the yogis, they drill their respiration, and the munis, they speculate for millions and billions of years. But they, and even they can travel at the speed of the mind or the speed of the wind, still, because they're not interested in Krishna, they don't approach even the tip of his toe. On the other hand, a surrendered devotee, even without much endeavor, seemingly endeavor, can at once get Krishna's mercy. Krishna says that sarva karmani sannyas, sarva, sannyas, yes.
Have a Bhagavad Gita?
Eku sarvani karmani, maya sanyasya matraha, ananya naiva yogema, mamdayantu upasite, eka aham samudarta, vityu samsara sagara, bhavami nacharat parta, maya vechaka chetasa. Yehu sarvani karmani, the one who gives up all the results of their activities to me. Yehu sarvani karmani, maya sanyasya matraha, who become devoted to me, become a Matparaha devotee. Ananya Naiva Yogena Mamdayanta Upasate, who always engage my service, meditating upon me. For them I am a swift deliverer from the ocean of birth and death. So we don't have to know that much about Krishna, nor do we have to have so many talents or information. We just have to surrender to Krishna. Then Krishna will pick us up from our material illusion of identifying ourselves with this body and the mind and our material circumstances. Our only problem is our attachment to these things. Otherwise, we have no problem. The very things which is our problem, our attachment, we think is our shelter, our refuge. We can't imagine an existence without this body. And we become fearful to think about it, that my identity, my activities, they all become meaningless if I'm out of the body. Therefore, everyone's afraid of leaving their body, their dear body, behind, because they don't know what's next. He thinks, finally, after so many lifetimes of serious and pious work, now I've gotten this jewel of the material body. And therefore, how can I leave it behind? However it may harass me, or bother me, or disturb me, I still can't give it up. I'm such a faithful servant. So under this conception, to think that I'm going to surrender to Krishna and he'll take me away from my bodily concept of life seems horrible to us. We can't imagine I'm going to be left with a 1/10,000th the size of the tip of hair and size of soul. And the big boss is unlimited, and I'm simply going to say, shine my shoes, and I got to shine the shoes. Life will go on, stay forever. Tiny me and big him. And who knows what he's going to have me do. Washing pots in the transcendental kitchen forever. I never liked to wash pots, but still, like, that's my job there. That's why I came here in the first place, get away. Get a vacation from washing pots eternally. Better to reign in hell than serve in heaven. Model of the material world. So one has to be willing to give up these false conceptions, not in the next lifetime or in 50 years, but we have to be willing to accept that Krishna is the controller of this material existence that we're under, and be willing to serve him here. If we won't serve him here, what are we going to do when we get to the spiritual world? Meditate on his pastimes there? All the gopis are going out to dance with Krishna, and we're sitting home meditating on him, his pastime. Or the coward boys are going out to herd the cows, and they ask us to go out. We say, well, I don't like cows. I didn't come to the spiritual world to herd cows. Dirty cows. Besides that, I'm a vegan. I don't drink milk. What do I got to do with these cows? So unless we can develop a service attitude here, and not only for a little while, when we're in the temple, there's a little halo over us. And then we leave the temples, you know, the mask peels off, and two horns stick out. We're back in our normal state of consciousness. No, we have to be willing to serve Krishna wherever we are, whatever we're doing, and serve Krishna's mission. Then we become eligible. If we can serve Krishna here, then we can serve Krishna anywhere. And then we can begin to understand something about what Krishna is doing. Otherwise, we won't understand why Krishna is coming as a fish, why he's coming as a tortoise, why he's coming as half man, half lion. It all seems rather strange to us. Maybe he did it because that way he increases the number of books, and then his devotees can sell more books, and they'll have more money to offer prasadam to him on the altar. But why he's coming in all these different incarnations becomes a little confusing to us. You know, what do I got to do with fish? I never like fish. Besides that, we're vegetarians. Why should we hear about fish all the time? Sounds rather fishy. A tortoise, you know. I mean, a swan, even he comes as a swan. He's supposed to come in all these different species of life. Then we come to a coward boy in Vrindavan. It all seems rather, you know, confusing. Maybe Narayan and Vaikuntha, but a coward boy? That's God, that's his highest pastime? That he gets pleasure from walking bare feet in Vrindavan. I mean, anyone who goes to Vrindavan will see, you would have to be crazy to walk around nowadays bare feet. That's why they build all these roads there now. And what is he doing? He's simply taking prasadam and dancing and herding cows all day long. I mean, this is progress. So it seems right for a materialist who lives in the city, who is making, you know, an endeavor to increase his material possessions, going out every day and herding cows doesn't seem like the highest success of life. That he's a coward boy. When Brahma comes, Krishna doesn't even realize he's holding his fruit and fruit salad in his left hand. He hasn't been even educated in the Vedic culture. So he's eating in his right hand. And this is God. So if we read the 10th canto without properly understanding Krishna, it seems rather strange. A materialist, when he hears that God, he took his birth in a prison, his parents were criminals, Therefore, he was in prison. He was the son of a criminal or criminals. They escaped. And then he was a foster child, put into a foster care for the rest of his life, practically speaking. But because he's criminally minded, because his parents were like that, as soon as one lady came to nurse him, he killed her. And that began his life of crime. A little taste of killing his poor nurse, and he wound up killing a bird, a bull, and a horse, and it just went on from there and got worse. Every day he would go and kill things in the forest. And then, as time went on, he developed these bad habits like stealing. He organized a band of criminals like himself, who were bored living, just herding cows all day, so they started to just steal from everyone. And then it went from bad to worse. He started to chase after all the girls in the village. And as soon as they got a little serious, he fled. And revived his criminal activities in another place, where he immediately killed his uncle and all his uncles, he killed them all, took over the kingdom, and then started to kill anyone who came practically to visit him. And then he went, because of his propensity, he went around the different countries stealing all the women, and then finally fled into the sea. At the end of his life, all his relatives, as usual, got intoxicated. They wind up killing each other. And this is the life of Krishna. So imagine what kind of people are his devotees. No one knows. Well, I mean, you can just see them on the street. They get up in the morning and they have no clothes because they offered everything to this Krishna. So they have to wear their bed sheets if they weren't that they were using it onto the street. And because they surrendered everything, including their intelligence. Therefore, all they can do is jump up and down with a big smile on their face, hoping that someone will give them some offering from their Krishna. So if we don't study Krishna carefully and see how he's actually controlling material energy and how the illusory energy is controlling those who don't accept Krishna's control, then we'll certainly mistake when we hear about Krishna's other activities. If we can't appreciate how Krishna is working in this world and how Krishna's mercy is being delivered through Chaitanya Mahaprabhu through the holy name, and that without even going back to the spiritual world, we can realize Krishna's transcendental nature. Because to hear about Krishna's pastimes without being in the internal energy doesn't make very much sense. Krishna's pastimes are not simply activities, they're activities in the spiritual nature. So hearing about the activities and not being in the spiritual nature means that we won't understand Krishna's activities at all, or misunderstand them. Therefore, our first business is to come to the spiritual platform so we can experience what the spiritual energy is. And that spiritual energy can be experienced whether one is fighting on the battlefield of Kurukshetra or washing pots in the temple, if one is actually conscious of Krishna. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is delivering the method of becoming conscious of Krishna. And through that method, one will be able to understand all of Krishna's activities. And without that method, one will not understand Krishna at all. One will misunderstand Krishna. Many personalities like Hamsa and Hiranyakashipu, or even Ravana, they're also Krishna in his different incarnations, but because they couldn't understand him, they were seeing him in the external energy, therefore they really didn't understand him, and they really didn't get the benefit that one should get by having darshan of Krishna. Similarly, Krishna is making himself available as the deity in the temple and as the holy name in the books. In so many different ways, Krishna is making himself available. And if we try to follow the process by which Krishna becomes pleased to reveal himself, then everything will make sense. And if we don't, then we'll always doubt what exactly I'm here for. How did I wind up here? Or where am I going? What is this all about? Why is it that I'm trying so hard and I don't seem to get anywhere? Well, that therefore, we have to very carefully understand, as Prabhupada writes, especially Krishna's pastimes in the external energy. Because if we don't understand Krishna's pastimes in the external energy, and therefore become free from the external energy, therefore we'll hear a 10th canto or any other book about Krishna, and we'll be in the external energy, although these pastimes are actually in the internal energy. And therefore we won't be able to appreciate them properly. And therefore we won't be able to revive our relation with Krishna, but we'll doubt Krishna. We'll misunderstand him. Therefore, our first business, as Krishna says in the 9th chapter, is to understand how he's controlling everything, but he's not responsible for anything, which is his yogam aishvarya, his inconceivable potency. How someone can control every minute part of the material existence down to the atom at every moment eternally and not be responsible for anything that goes on. Be completely aloof. If someone gives us some little control over something, immediately we become attached. Mother has a child, immediately she feels great attachment to the child because she's taking care of the child. And the child feels great attachment to the mother because the mother is taking care of the child. So how could Krishna be controlling everything, maintaining everyone, every moment, and yet be completely unattached to anything that's going on? Whatever people are desiring, Krishna, according to the laws of nature, he's fulfilling their desires according to what they deserve, at every moment, eternally, and not at all be affected by anything that goes on here. Sarva karma, sarva bhutani kumpya mortya sambhavantya hasa brahma mahajonya hambhiga sarva bhutani kumpya prakriti adimamikam kapushe pranasthami kapudova shri jamya. At the beginning of the creation, I sent forth all the living beings, and at the end of creation, I annihilate them all. Prakriti svama dishtaya Vishri Jani Punak Punak Bhuta Grama Mimam Kritsnam Agasham Prakritira Vasha. Again and again I sent forth these creations, and then at the appointed time I annihilate everything. So what kind of person is this? He sends forth creations, everyone struggles here, he watches their struggle at every moment, and then at the time, without any remorse, he just annihilates everyone. Imagine someone goes on the street, takes a machine gun, and just annihilates people on the street indiscriminately. He's a terrorist. So what does it speak of Krishna? He annihilates universes, and not one tear rolls down his eye. How hard-hearted he must be. Not that here's one universe and many nice souls in the universe. I think I'll save this one. No. All the universes, that's it. Men, women, children, cat, dog, everyone. Innocent people get annihilated. But no one's innocent. Krishna is simply, this is how the material world works. It's a playground for the souls who want to imagine themselves to be something that they're not, and they're working under Krishna's energy, under the laws. Out of sentiment, out of ignorance, we imagine what's going on here. And therefore we create heroes and villains, we create good and bad and all these different things. But actually it's just a mechanical machine going on, which we're trapped in due to our false understanding of reality, our causeless unwillingness to accept ourselves as Krishna's servants. We're forced to go through these dramas one lifetime after another. And because we're attached to the drama, therefore we don't understand things properly, especially Krishna. Krishna doesn't want us to be falsely absorbed and involved or implicated in this drama. He wants us to wake up and get out of the drama. Then we can do good for ourselves and do good for others. And the fact that Krishna is not involved in the drama doesn't make him any less loving person. He never asks anyone, just like the prison warden doesn't put up a big sign, prison cell, everyone come and eat. Free room, free board, stay here as long as you like. Now the prison warden is going from prisoner to prisoner, asking him, please become a responsible citizen so you don't have to stay in the prison. And the prisoners are saying, why are you so, you know, pessimistic, you know? This is a great place. I get free food, and you know, it's a nice warm cell. And why you want me to leave? You don't love me. You don't mind my associate. No, the prison warden wants us to become a good citizen, leave the prison, and begin our real life outside the prison. So we've come to the material world, we like being prisoners, we've developed a taste for it, and we want to experience different varieties of prison cells. Even we say, oh, look at that prison cell. If I was living there, I'd be really happy. Look at that stripe, that new suit he has on with all those stripes on it. It's better than that ugly pinstripe one I have on. No change. And look at his ball, you know, and chain. What a nice ball and chain he has. I think I'll trade it in for mine. No, we should understand Krishna as he is, that he doesn't want us to be here. Then we'll understand that Krishna actually is acting for our interest, trying to get us out of here. And that the material nature, when she's slapping us to wake us up. That's simply out of animosity towards us. She's trying to wake us up so we realize that this is not a place to stay. It's a dangerous place. If you're walking on the street and you see a sign, keep out, dangerous dogs, barbed wire fence, electrical wires, danger, you see crossbones everywhere. And you think, well, I haven't seen one of these in a long time. So let's go in and pet the dogs. I love dogs. And besides that, I need a little exercise. Let's climb up this fence. So you climb up the fence, you get electrocuted, you fall into the place where the dogs are, and they start eating you. You say, how did this happen? I'm a nice person. Why is this happening to me? God doesn't love me, or the owner doesn't love me. No, we should accept Krishna's words, as he says in Bhagavad Gita, and try to engage ourselves in surrendering to Krishna, giving back the stolen goods, this body, our mind, our words, and everything else. Try to give it back to Krishna, and therefore we'll be set free to go back to the spiritual world. And then we'll be able to understand that here in Goloka Vrindavan, Krishna is engaged in loving pastimes with his associates, and that's what Krishna relishes. He's God, but he relishes loving exchanges, just like we do. And the most intimate exchangers would not be as the king, controlling everyone, but as an ordinary person. And therefore Krishna likes being a cowherd boy in Vrindavan, and his dear most devotees like him as a cowherd boy, and therefore they can exchange most intimate relationships on the spiritual platform of loving exchanges. But generally speaking, we don't talk about these things until people understand the fact that they're trapped in spiritual souls trying to exploit Krishna's energies, and therefore being captured by the illusory energy. They're being faced with so many so-called problems. They're just creations of their own past activities. That nothing has happened by accident. Simply Krishna is having the material nature arranged to give us to reciprocate with our own past activities. Tattu te nukam pam susamik shamano punjana eva makritam vipakam. But Vridvat Bhaktivir Vidadanas He Vedas San Mukti Padai Sudai Bhakt. So a devotee who sees like that, he can tolerate so many inconveniences, so many different problems, because he knows this is Krishna's arrangement for me according to my own activities, and that Krishna is minimizing the problems I'm facing just so I can learn tolerance. And if I learn tolerance and continue on with my devotional service in spite of so-called obstacles and distractions and problems, then I become eligible to go back to the spiritual world where there are no problems like there are here. There are problems, but they're all ecstatic problems. They're all different varieties of pleasure. Whether I want this pleasure or that pleasure, that's the problem, sir. And here the problem is, what kind of misery I'm going to face next? Do I want the rope or the electric chair? Want to be hung or electrocuted? That's our choices here. Sounds pretty pessimistic. Anyhow, we shouldn't end this. Instead, we should chant Hare Krishna and try to understand Krishna in truth. And then we'll, as we come to the spiritual platform, everything will be revealed to us just like the sunlight of everything in the daytime. And Krishna, or as it says here, when Krishna comes here and he displays his pastimes, then they're even more wonderful. Therefore, these pastimes are also eternal. And this pastime of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu delivering the souls in this age is also a wonderful pastime to take part in. We don't have to become a cowherd boy or a cowherd girl. We just have to become a servant of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and engage in this pastime, along with the Panchatattva and the six Goswamis in our disciple succession. And this we'll find out is a wonderful pastime of delivering the conditioned souls in this age, including ourselves, of course. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions, comments? Yes.
If I haven't, this question of course is eternal, if I haven't overcome influence of material energy, I'm still subject to it. So, can I still hear the passages of Krishna, like Krishna?
You can hear them. You can hear them, but how, what you're going to get out of it is another thing. Therefore, when Prabhupada, Krishna book especially, was made in such a way for those who want to hear Krishna's pastimes and get a good deal of philosophy along with it, to put it into some perspective that can be practically applied within our own lives. But without such commentaries, without such an understanding, they're nice to listen to, but it would be better for us to read the first and second cantos. We would go for at least our spiritual advancement. But there's nothing wrong in, as a systematic approach to reading Prabhupada's books, to go through the books systematically, one after another. And therefore we don't stop at the 10th canto. But we know that my depth of understanding of this is not going to be very great. That more or less, for most of us, it's just like we're on the outside of the bottle of honey, and now we're looking inside the bottle of honey. We can see what it looks like, but we can't taste it very well. Yes?
You said that Krishna appears in every species of life. How we are supposed to understand that? Does Krishna come to say?
We probably can't understand it, so we shouldn't bother. we see the species he's appearing in as generally the incarnations that are mentioned, but other incarnations of animals and insects are not really mentioned. So how can we understand that? If there is or isn't, what difference does it make? The essential incarnations of the different species that appear to help us become Krishna conscious. So that we can appreciate. But Krishna can do anything, but obviously whatever pastime there is, whether a fish or a boar or a tortoise, they have a specific function. So what Krishna is going to do in other species is beyond me. Yeah.
Sometimes I find myself that you get some kind of taste in spiritual life or something, you get some kind of understanding or something, like Krishna's past themselves is small, and like you, you kind of become complacent from that. You can kind of, because when you're not going to taste, then you kind of you push yourself more to get, and then when you get it, then you think of that, then you kind of.
We're under the anesthesia of Maya. And you know, sometimes we wake up slightly and we think we're awake, but actually we're always asleep. So by Krishna's mercy, by the mercy of his representatives, or acharyas, therefore sometimes we, by practice and devotional service, we get a little taste. But then we should understand, at least intellectually, what our real position is. That we're asleep. Therefore we should make the endeavor to wake up, despite the fact that we imagine ourselves to be awake to begin with. When we use our intelligence, we'll see that we're actually asleep in this world. And we shouldn't be satisfied until we actually wake up. Yes.
How can we understand Krishna?
Well, one of the ways is to hear Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, and chant Hare Krishna, and then follow their instructions of the previous acharyas coming down to the succession. And then Krishna will give us the intelligence to understand them. The Dhamma Buddha Yoga come. The more we constantly engage in service to him with love, enthusiasm, the more he gives us the intelligence to come to him. Yes.
What is the difference between influence of karma toward devotees and non-devotees?
Well, for those who are aspiring to become devotees, Krishna arranges their karma in such a way as to help them become devotees. And for the non-devotees, Krishna arranges their karma in such a way as to inspire them to become devotees. For the devotee, Krishna arranges them their karma in such a way as to help them become further advanced in devotional service. And for the non-devotees, Krishna arranges their karma in such a way as to inspire them to become devotees. Anything else? Okay, thank you very much. Grantarai Shmad Bhagavatam Kidai. Srila Prabhupada Kidai.